following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this February 26, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Tons to get to on the show today. Upset City last night in college basketball, and we hope that Auburn can get off of that trend as they host Ole Miss tonight inside of Neville Arena. So talking a lot about what happened last night, what's coming up tonight in college basketball, plus what a perfect time. It always seems like we have this guy on the show in perfect situations. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, with Georgia being one of those teams that pulled off one of the biggest upsets of the season, and it could not have come at a better time for the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll talk about that today with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, our usual Wednesday guest at 2:30. And then coming up in hour number two, that's right, it's Double D Wednesday with Daryl Dapprich. He'll join us coming up in the second hour. We'll get some fun football conversation with him, plus we'll dive into Auburn basketball as well as the Tigers host Ole Miss tonight. Joining me in the studio today, Christian Griffin across from me. How are you, my man? I'm sure you're feeling okay after your prediction last night. Whatever. You're like 1-for-20 now. You got your win, though. Congratulations. Georgia beats Florida.
Yes. Georgia beats Florida. Again, the Sandstorm rendition. Ever since then, we're 2-0. So that's all that I know. I don't know anything about
the radio gods
felt
bad for you.
I don't know anything about that. It's like the meme of the guy that's mining for diamonds and he stops and turns around, but the guy under him keeps going, and you can see that he's finding the diamonds. That's where we're at right now. Sandstorm, that rendition has brought me back. Georgia beats Florida at home. Really excited to be able to talk about that, especially with Jordan Hill. You mentioned a great time to have him on to be able to dive into everything that happened in Stegman Coliseum. I want his thoughts on the court storming, because it was not traditional. Yeah. They did the 90-second timer, allowing everybody to get off the floor that needed it, basically taking away any possible fines that come with it. And so excited to see or hear what all he has to say about that. And you mentioned a bunch of other upsets throughout the game or throughout the night last night. And then the football conversations as well, as we continue to dive closer and closer to March Madness and spring practice on the gridiron as well.
So we'll go ahead, and since it's a guest-heavy show today, I want to give you the opportunity to be a part of the show if you want to call in. The phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. We'll go ahead and get those open for you if you want to be a part of today's show. You can always shoot us a text if you've got questions, comments for us, or even for our guest as well. If you want to do that, you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And last night, we mentioned yesterday, while it wasn't the most attractive slate in college basketball, it became attractive late because of what happened in some of these big-time games. Duke did what they were supposed to do, and then some. They almost doubled up the spread in this game against Miami, where they were 22.5-point favorites, Christian Griffin, and they win by 37 points on the road against Miami, 97-60. And yes, it shows how good Duke is, but my God, it shows how bad the ACC is. I mean, that's embarrassing. The ACC should be embarrassed with themselves.
I've seen a bunch of things posted on like the ACC network sites, and it's talking about how Duke has 5 20-point victories over the ACC this year, and it's like, good for you, but also bad for you, literally showing you how poor the bottom half of these teams are. Did you hear the new news with the Duke Blue Devils? They have overtaken Auburn in the number one net ratings now. And you know why? Because they've played another game. It happens every single time, and everybody on X goes crazy about it because Duke overcomes Auburn, overtakes Auburn for number one. It's like, correct. The Auburn stats have yet to be put in for either that night or the game tonight. And so it's a nightly trend, but yes, the Duke Blue Devils 97-60 on the road. Miami, man, what happened? What happened with this team? This is a team that beat Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler a couple years ago. Obviously, different players. That was one of the oldest teams in college basketball, which ironically was praised back then and now is taken as a bit of a joke for Auburn, referring to Miami being one of the oldest teams a couple years ago. But 2-15 in the ACC is not going to get it done, and they're looking for a new head coach in there as well. So a lot of holes trying to be filled on the Hurricane side of things right now.
Yeah, James Phillips, the athletic director of the conference commissioner of the ACC. I mean, you've got to be embarrassed, right? I mean, no way you wear your logo proudly right now. There's no shot. Other than Duke, you have nothing. Nothing. You're scrapping to get three teams into the tournament right now, maybe four. They keep trying to say there's five. Wake Forest is not a tournament team. North Carolina is not a tournament team. We had this conversation yesterday. So there's no way that James Phillips is confidently wearing the ACC logo. And it's embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing if you're a Miami team that has made runs to the Final Four, Elite Eight, Sweet 16 my entire life. And yes, you have Larrañaga, who's no longer there. They're now looking for a new head coach. I mean, things are not pretty in Miami, right? I mean, you got people's cars getting stolen. You got, I mean, it's crazy happening down there in Miami. But the fact that they can't get legitimate talent on the basketball floor for the men's team is pretty wild. And so what's also fascinating to me is nobody's talking about the Miami gig. It's not a place that people talk about going. It's been a job that's never been available for decades, right? But nobody's really talking about, oh, yeah, I could go be the next coach in Miami. Like, nobody wants that job, man. Nobody wants to coach in the ACC. It sucks. Nobody wants to be there because there's one good team right now. And we ultimately know what is the downfall of the ACC. It's the fact that it's not going to exist. And if it does, it's not going to be a part of the other big conferences. So, yes, this is basketball, but it's just wild to see how far that conference has dropped off. And it shows how much North Carolina means to that conference. It shows how important they are when they're not good.
Or that the rivalry, yeah.
Yeah, when North Carolina's not good, how far the ACC drops off when they don't exist. So Duke does what they were supposed to do, 97-60. Some other teams that took care of business, they had to fight for it, did Tennessee. But they got a win over LSU last night on the road, 65-59. At this point, you'll take a win if you're Tennessee. The fact that LSU is still fighting, I think, tells me a lot about that team and that program, the guys that are making up that squad. But they just come up a little bit short against Tennessee in a game where the Vols had to win.
Yeah, only 49 points combined scored in that first half. Tennessee was up 26-23, and you felt like if that was a score that benefited one of the teams, it was Tennessee. Did pretty much the exact same thing in the second half, outscored them by 39-36. Not a pretty game, 65-59. That's kind of what you think about the Tennessee offense as a whole, but the defense still shows up night in and night out, and that's going to be what wins them games throughout the regular season and into March.
Yeah, some teams that also did what they were supposed to do. Wisconsin smacks Washington 88-62. Missouri drops 101 on South Carolina. The Gamecocks got that win, baby. But they may be done because they give up 101, only score 71. They lose by 30 on the road to Missouri last night. Louisville had to fight off Virginia Tech, a bad Virginia Tech team, but Louisville avoids a nasty loss, and Marquette beats Providence by 30 at home. Then you get into the games that were fascinating, and we'll start with the one that was supposed to be fascinating because it was the only top 25 matchup happening in college basketball last night, but correct me if I'm wrong, I think you and I predicted this, did we not? I think we said, and I quote, this could get ugly.
Yes.
In Coleman Coliseum. And sure enough, it did. 111 to 73. Alabama was up 53-27 at the half. It was so bad, Christian, that John Rothstein went ahead and sent out his tweet that Nate Oates, my cousin Vinny, or whatever the heck he says.
Sent it at halftime?
The winning tweet, he sent it at halftime. He sent that out at halftime. 53-27, Alabama does even better offensively in the second half, scoring 58 points. Didn't matter they gave up 46. They win 111-73.
I saw something that said that the strategy and the one key that you have to beating Alabama is whether or not your guards can defend on ball. Otherwise, bye.
You're done.
You're done. And that's kind of what you see throughout the year. Again, that's the NBA style that Nate Oates and Alabama runs. And this is games like this where we talked about just the matchup was a nightmare. It was close in Starkville because of Mississippi coming off hot and Josh Hubbard having one of the best games that he's had this season. Chris Youngblood, a guy that I've continued to talk about. I don't know what it is. He must hate Mississippi State. He had 27 last night against them and had 23 in the game before. Those are both his two season highs for Alabama this year. Went 7 of 11, 7 from 10 from deep back on January 29th. Went 7 of 11 from deep last night. 27 points led all scores, I believe, or did he tie with Mark Sears last night?
What, in the points category?
No, he by far led. I was on the wrong one. Led by far in the points category, 27. Mm-hmm. Mark Sears with 21. Alabama goes 22 of 45 from behind the three-point line.
That's ridiculous. They hit 22 threes, man.
They hit 22 threes. Mississippi State made 28 shots.
Golly, man. It's crazy to see what Alabama could do when they're hot. And look at Mark Sears. Yeah, he had 21 points. He had 10 assists. He had a double-double last night, did Mark Sears, in that starting rotation. And Aiden Holloway had another good night for Alabama. Didn't really need it, but he had it. 13 points, 3 of 7 from downtown. How about this? 5 assists, no turnovers for Aiden Holloway last night. He's playing good, man. I've continued to say, Auburn fans don't like it. He is an X factor for this team.
Sure.
When they get in close games. He very well could be the reason that Alabama wins or loses an NCAA tournament game. If he goes 0 for 8 from downtown and has 4 turnovers, Alabama might just lose. But if he comes in and has a night like he did last night, 50% from the floor, double-digit points, 5 assists, and 0 turnovers and 23 minutes played, that's enough to put you over the edge in a Sweet 16 game if Alabama finds themselves in that spot.
Easily. I mean, that's essentially guard number 3 on the team this year because Youngblood's made his way into the starting lineup. So you now have Holloway coming off the bench, and it continues. We've talked about it. We've heard both sides talk about it to where two things can be true at the same time of this style of basketball at Alabama fitting Holloway a little bit better than Auburn's system may have. And Auburn, I'd say, is in a decent spot right now as well.
How about Grant Nelson? In his last 3, he's yet to hit double digits. In 4 in his last 5, he's yet to hit double digits. And this is a guy we saw against Kentucky have 25. We saw against North Dakota way back when had 23. 17 against South Dakota State had 15 against Mississippi State, 16 against Georgia, 15 against Arkansas. 4 of his last 5, he's yet to hit double digits. So I don't know if he's going to come back around, but it could be a situation where round of 32, all of a sudden, here's the matchup problem. Here comes Grant Nelson, and he can drop 20 on you at pretty much any given time. They just haven't really used or needed him. They could have used him, I guess, against Auburn where he had 12 or Missouri where he had 8, but I don't know. It's weird with Grant Nelson right now.
I think the combination of Omaruyi and Muhammad Diabate, I think the two of them can play a little bit more physical than Grant Nelson. Cliff had 8. Diabate had 10 and went 8 of 10 from the floor and combined for 19 of their 42 rebounds. I think those are the guys that now clog the paint down low rather than that was what they relied on Grant Nelson to do. Nelson can kind of be that corner sitter when he wants to be or work his way into the low block. And by no means do you want to say they haven't necessarily needed him, but the offense that they've ran, especially over the past couple of weeks, hasn't necessarily been one that favors him or sets him up with open shots. You feel like there's other guys that are in the pecking order that continue to work their way to get those open shots and get those looks.
He's the one they call on, I feel like, in the round of 32 when Alabama is 4 of 30 from downtown and they need a bucket getter, right? Other than Mark Sears getting to the free throw line, that's when Grant Nelson steps in. And they may just... For them to make a run to the Final Four, they're going to need him. And they didn't need him last night. 111-73, Alabama smacks Mississippi State. We said it was going to happen, and it did. One of us said another upset. Well, that wasn't an upset, but one of us said an upset was going to happen. We didn't predict the other one. We'll talk about two crazy outcomes that happened last night in college basketball when we come back, as we're just underway, here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Appreciate you being with us on this gorgeous Wednesday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. And I'm going to hand it to you, sir. You called it. You did. You called it. Georgia handles business. Takes down Florida last night. 88-83. Largest lead in the game, Christian Griffin, was 26 points. For Georgia, it was wild. They're up by 16 at the half. They've dropped 51 points on one of the best defensive teams in college basketball, and everybody's going, whoa, what's happening in Athens? What in the world is going on? And then here come the Gators. Here come the Gators. Here come the Gators. And all of a sudden, oh no, Georgia's blown it. They've done it. They let Florida come all the way back. They had a two-point lead, and here he comes. Blue Kane, baby. Blue Kane steps up, knocks down a right-wing three with about 45 seconds to go. The whole fouling game ensues, and the Dogs get it done. 88-83, and the season may have been saved last night.
The season rolls on. We're going to get a hot key, whether that's later this afternoon for Jordan Hill or tomorrow, but we're going to have something in there where talked about Blue Kane and the Dogs coming out and finding a way. I almost found a way to lose it as well,
yeah,
as you mentioned. Had a 16-point lead at half. I talked about if Florida comes out like they did in the first half against LSU, I think Georgia's good enough to find a way to win. And I only got to watch the last 4 or 5 minutes of this game, and I thought it was neck and neck the entire time. Then I went back and looked and saw how it was dominated by Georgia for the first 35, 38 minutes, and then all of a sudden, 25, 28 minutes, and all of a sudden it was, oh, no, not like this.
They were up by 26 at one point. That was their largest lead, man. 26, and they let Florida come back and take the lead down the stretch.
And you mentioned Alex Condon coming back, if that was going to be a factor. He goes 1 of 7. 7 of his 9 points come at the free throw line. Silas Demery Jr., 21 points. Asa Newell has 15 and 9, and the Dogs, after waiting 90 seconds to storm the court to let all of the Gators and everybody get off the floor, storms the floor for one of the very few times in Stegman Coliseum over the most recent years, and we've mentioned it, where I don't think 2-2 does it for Georgia. Not sure 3-1 did it. That was the conversation yesterday. Now, if you go 3-1 and you hang that win over Florida in your resume, along with St. John's, who is a Final Four type team, could very much see themselves, might still need a little bit of help from Texas, who we talked about is in the driver's seat, playing a couple of teams in the bubble, but could very easily now win that eye test and the resume test over a couple of these other SEC teams in the bubble.
Yeah, you had for Florida, Walter Clayton Jr. with 18. Will Richard had 30 points in this game. He was a big part of the comeback in that second half. And again, Florida, down by as many as 26, comes back. They have a two-point lead. And Georgia had to hit a shot to go ahead, right, to get ahead with about 45 seconds. And Blue Kane comes off the screen. He's as wide open as he could be, buddy. And he knocked it down, and Georgia eventually hangs on for the win that they needed. And so I think in this type of a scenario for Georgia, we mentioned a lot of it yesterday, and you just brought it back up there about how they needed this win. Their tournament lives are on the line every single game from here on out, and they played like it last night. And we expected nothing less from a Mike White coach team. I said I didn't think Georgia could win, but they would give Florida everything they wanted. And they did. And it just kind of went in reverse fashion, and Georgia gets it done. For Florida, big picture, not the end of the world. In terms of winning the SEC, though, this helped Auburn big time. Big time. Because now, if Auburn can get a win tonight against Ole Miss, which we'll talk more about later in hour number two, if Auburn can get a win tonight, as it stands today, Auburn has a 2.5 game lead on Florida. Auburn has a game and a half lead on Alabama. Of course, you play the Crimson Tide coming up in just a couple of weeks, but you don't play Florida again. And good news is, Alabama and Florida do play. So the Tigers can really separate themselves tonight with a win versus Ole Miss because of what happened in Athens last night.
Yeah, it's essentially a 2-game lead over Florida and Alabama as of right now because of the tiebreaker going in Auburn's direction over Alabama. And now you don't have to watch that game as seriously cheering for one or the other team, cheering for Alabama to beat Florida or for Florida to beat Alabama. This win tonight and the game on Saturday against Kentucky could lock up the SEC all but for certain. And again, I mentioned it, two of those wins I think could lock up the number one overall seed as well, because again, you talk about how crazy college basketball is. Auburn's win over Arkansas and Auburn's sweep over Georgia now looks a whole lot better.
It does. It looks really, really good. And so that was one of the crazy upsets from last night. And props to you, my friend. You did. You predicted it. You called it with Georgia beating Florida 88-83. The other upset last night, nobody. There is not a soul who predicted this to happen. The ninth ranked team in the country, the Iowa State Cyclones. Maybe TJ Otzelberger's just got his mind on somewhere else. I don't know. He loses his second game in a row after they dropped a tough one to Houston over the weekend. They go to Stillwater. Yes, Stillwater, Oklahoma, to take on the Cowboys of Oklahoma State, who have done really nothing of relevance this year, not a whole lot. And they fall on the road in Big 12 play, 74-68. The Cowboys get it done. Their best win of the season by far. What in the world is going on with the Cyclones?
The Iowa State Cyclones are 4-5 in their last 9 games.
Gross. And they're still a top 10 team as of right now.
And a 2 seed in the tournament. You want to talk about a team that we mentioned it after their loss against, I believe it was Kansas State. That was back-to-back losses over Arizona and then Kansas State at the time. They followed it up with a loss at Kansas, and then they went on a 4-game win streak, then losses to Houston and Oklahoma State. We talked about it if they were done.
That was a 17-point loss to Kansas, by
yes.
the way.
And we mentioned what is going on. We kind of threw it off the shoulder of they're dealing with some injuries.
Which they are.
They are, but you know, things will come back here in a little bit, and they'll be fine, but a 2 seed right now, that's one of those scary 2 seeds to where they might end up being a 3 or 4 just because of how they're playing at the end of the year. They do have a couple games to get back. Arizona and BYU, they both play at home, and both of those top 25 teams. So you have the chance of get-back games, but one of those games just because of Oklahoma State, and they're 14-14, 6-11 in conference play. It's one of those ones where we've talked about plenty of times where you don't get any credit for winning it, but that's going to be a loss that you really, really highlight at the end of the year in the wrong direction of Iowa State.
And they're not out of the woods yet. They've got the 22nd ranked team of the country, Arizona, this weekend. They have BYU coming in, who is right now a top 25 team, very quietly has squeaked their way into the top 25. And then they go on the road to Kansas State, a team they've already lost to. They let Kansas State come to Iowa State and beat them 80-61. So the Cyclones are nowhere near done and with this regular season. They can't wait for the regular season to get done. They're saying, man, get us to the tournament. We are done with this crap. We are ready to play tournament basketball. They're ready to have a week off before yes. they play tournament basketball. And they do need to get healthy, because when they are, Auburn has seen it. That's a really good Iowa State team. One that I think is Final Four good when healthy and playing their best. But my goodness, that's not right now.
It's not right now. Again, you've seen the dominance and you've seen what can happen if they are not on their game. And that's two very, very different ends of the spectrum.
Iowa State, one of the big upsets from last night. But it was Georgia taking down Florida that's got people in this part of the country talking. And we'll have that conversation with Jordan Hill. Get more insight on that, who writes for Dogs 247. He joins us coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Across from me is Christian Griffin. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and we get to the phone lines welcoming in our usual Wednesday guest at 2:30, and we've had him on for some very opportune times this year, and none better than right now, as Georgia is the talk of the town, talk of the conference, thanks to their win last night against Florida. He is Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Man, looks like the season may have been revived for you, and basketball season may go on just a little bit longer there in Athens, huh, Jordan?
Yeah, we'll have to see, Jacob. They definitely got a big boost on Tuesday night, and I'm not sure if my March calendar is going to be as wide open as I was thinking, but definitely a big win for Georgia basketball, and definitely a shot in the arm with just a few games left in the regular season.
Yeah, cancel that beach trip. You may have to travel somewhere to cover a tournament game. And we're going to get to that in just a second. And we're going to get to last night's game in just a second. But, of course, Auburn and Georgia played this past Saturday where Georgia was in it again. Georgia was right there against the number one team in the country. This time, of course, it was inside of Neville Arena. Just came up a little bit short. Your takeaways from the game Saturday, excluding what we saw last night in Athens?
Yeah, you know, 12-point win for Auburn. I thought the game was a lot closer than that. But, you know, it was a game where Georgia, I thought, you know, really acquitted itself well. You know, that was a game that I thought had the chance to be a blowout. You know, with the momentum Auburn had and Georgia struggling going into that game at the time, was riding a three-game losing streak. But Georgia didn't have a game in the midweek, and I really thought it served Georgia well. I thought they got a lot more creative on offense. I thought you saw Silas Demery Jr., who might be the player of the month for Georgia, has just really come on as a scorer, had a good game in that game against Auburn. And, you know, really when you look at that game and how it played out, I think it boiled down to missed opportunities and really two different halves for Georgia. First half did a great job of really slowing down Auburn's offense. But Georgia couldn't take advantage. I think they started 1-10 from the field, really struggled scoring-wise. And then, you know, the script kind of flipped in the second half, where it seemed like Georgia had plenty of success scoring, just could not stop Auburn, specifically could not stop Janiah Broome. He ends up with 31-14, the kind of game that if he is, you know, winds up winning National Player of the Year, you point to the highlights from that game and understand that, you know, that was sort of him at the peak of his power. So it was a game where, you know, I was impressed. At this point in the season, you know, moral victories don't mean very much, but you play the number one team on their court, you know, on their home floor, and I thought they really handled the moment well. And talking to some of the players after the game, you know, I thought that they understood that they took steps forward, that they saw real promise and real improvement, and as we'll talk about in a minute, I think that carried over to what they were able to do in the midweek this week.
Yeah, that was the question I was going to bring up to you, was the second half scoring. Georgia puts up 46 points in the second half against Auburn inside Neville Arena, and then you transition the game from last night where Georgia puts up 51 in the first half against Florida. Two of the best scoring halves from this Georgia team throughout the year. Got a little bit scary, but again, that first half ultimately puts them in the right spot to get that win late in the game against Florida. Man, if you were telling me if Florida puts up 83 points in the game, I might tell you that Florida cruises. Instead, like we're talking about, Georgia's found the bottom of the net quite often, especially going from the second half to the first half last night.
No doubt, and it was a situation, just a drastic change from when Georgia and Florida played. So last night's game was on February 25th. They had played previously on January 25th. In that game, Georgia scored 59 points in total, and they hit 51 in the first half. I mean, just an outstanding performance. I thought the biggest thing, Georgia just shot with confidence. And I think, again, it started with Silas Demery Jr. I mean, the first half from him was fantastic. 14 points, hit 3 3-pointers. And the thing that impressed me the most, he just shot the three ball with a lot of confidence, which is something this team as a whole has lacked. And, you know, they came out firing. I think that they understood, you know, I think had Georgia lost last night, it wouldn't necessarily knock them out of the NCAA tournament talk. But they had a lot of catching up to do with how they had struggled in the month of February. They saw a real opportunity against a dangerous Florida team, but understanding they were playing on their home floor, and they deserve a lot of credit. 51 points in the first half, got a little tight in that second half, and what was really the most impressive thing to me, Florida takes the lead with, I think, about 108 to go. And, you know, I'm sitting there, and to be quite honest, I'm thinking, you know, Georgia's lost this game. There's no way they're going to respond after this comeback Florida's made, and Georgia did. Blue Kane hits the go-ahead three with 47 seconds left. Asa Newell gets some huge rebounds, and they finish the drill. I know that there were some Georgia fans upset that it got to that point, but we're talking about the number three team in the country they were playing. Florida was not going to just lay down. I give Georgia a lot of credit for finding a way to win, and if they do make the NCAA tournament, I think you have to point to this game and this performance as being a big reason why.
Well, this was for Georgia, the tail end of what's been a brutal stretch in the month of February. As you mentioned, they played Mississippi State, ranked 22, Texas A&M, ranked 8, Missouri, ranked 21, Auburn, ranked 1, and Florida, ranked number 3. And with the three remaining games against Texas, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt, our conversation yesterday on the show, Jordan, was this was Georgia's last big chance to get that win that they were looking for. Doesn't mean you can mess up as much down the stretch, but they got it when they needed it, and with Mike White at the helm, that didn't come to a surprise to us that they played that well. What about you?
No, I mean, I think that it was a really impressive showing, and I think you could tell, even going back to the Auburn game, that they felt like things were trending in the right direction. Now, what I'm interested to see is how they respond and what's left. They got three games left at Texas on Saturday. I think that's going to be huge. Really, for whoever wins that game, I think is going to take a huge step forward as far as making this tournament. Then the following week, you play at South Carolina. That's a South Carolina team with the only one SEC win. And then you host Vanderbilt, who, much like Texas, is in a spot where they're trying to sneak into the NCAA tournament. So big opportunity ahead, even before we start talking about the NCAA or the SEC tournament in Nashville. Georgia's got some momentum, but let's see how it carries over because, again, you know, playing in Austin on Saturday, that stands as a huge challenge, in my opinion. And this is a Georgia team that is still waiting for its first SEC road win of the season. They sure could use it if they could find a way to make it happen on Saturday night.
We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 here on ESPN 106.7. Jordan, the TV broadcast switched over right before everything happened at the end of the game. I want you to be able to describe everything that you saw. From what we've heard, is there was a 90-second count that got put on the shot clock right after the final buzzer went, allowed everybody, including the Gators and their staff, to get off the floor before the court storming. Talk to us about everything that happened on that, and then your thoughts of whether you think that's a pro or a con for anything moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of wild, you know, tracking the end of that game and sort of watching it, and also, you know, getting a chance to see some of the stuff later. You had Georgia Athletic Director Josh Brooks really calling for the fans to wait. Kirby Smart was part of the conversation. He's kind of waving the fans, hey, just sit down. Let's not, you know, have to write a big check to the SEC. And, you know, I thought that doing a 90-second countdown clock, which let Florida get off the floor and make sure everything was safe and, again, avoid a really huge fine, to me, that is the nice middle ground. You know, I think that on one side, you want to let your fans celebrate. You know, I had folks asking me last night, you know, have you ever seen Stegman Coliseum stormed, and no, I have not. Talking to some of the older beat writers, they didn't seem to remember the last time that had happened. I'm sure it's probably happened at some point. But at the same time, I get really nervous, guys, at the end of games when you got fans running on the floor, especially when the opposing team's on there, because you got people acting like idiots, running into athletes, running into coaches. I thought this was a nice middle ground of still letting everybody celebrate. You know, they met the Georgia team at midcourt, was out there with them. And, you know, I know there were some folks that were like, it kind of feels disingenuous, or, you know, it's not quite authentic because you have to wait. But the safety of everybody involved to me is the biggest thing. I thought it was a nice touch to, you know, let everybody who did not want to be on the floor anymore get off, but then let the fans get out there and have some fun.
Well, Georgia got the big win they were looking for. As we mentioned, they go to Texas Saturday, then at South Carolina, a team that has just one win in the SEC before they wrap it up against Vanderbilt. One more question, and then we'll go on the football side of things. To this point, I know you alluded to it a little bit earlier. What does Georgia need to do in those final three games? We know they've been on the bubble basically all season long. They've been close, just haven't been able to break through until last night. What does Georgia need to do in the final three games to ensure, or maybe even in Nashville too, Jordan, to ensure that they get into the NCAA tournament?
Well, you know, Jacob, it's hard to know for sure. I mean, a lot of projections. Sure. I will be interested in the next day or so to see like the bracket matrix and what some of the other projections have. But my thought, after beating Florida, I think Georgia needs to win two of its next three to end the regular season, and then probably win at least one game in the SEC tournament. Now, again, I think your easiest path is probably going to be winning at South Carolina and beating Vanderbilt in the regular season finale. But if you could win at Texas, I think that would be huge, with that being a big road win. I think they're in better position. I saw that Joe Lunardi only kind of bumped Georgia up to the first four out. I think they might have gotten a little bit more of a boost than that. And again, we'll be interested to see what some of the latest projections have after the Florida game. At the same time, you know, when you look at the bubble, when you look at some of these projections, it's sort of where they stand right now. They're not necessarily predicting what they're going to do in these next few games. You know, the ball is quite literally in Georgia's court. Can they take advantage? I don't think they have to put together a four-game winning streak going into the SEC tournament, but I think you need two of the three, and you would certainly help your cause by winning at least in the opening round in Nashville.
And now to the football side of things, before we let you get out of here, there's 14 players that are making their way here on the combine week for the NFL. You have guys like Malachi Starks, Mykel Williams, Jalen Walker, who are kind of just putting their finishing touches on what is projected to be first-round draft picks. But what's a name that we should possibly look out for, or a couple names that you think the draft combine could really boost their potential as they make their way to the pros?
I'd throw out two names. Smile Mundon, a guy that's a veteran linebacker, a guy that played through injury the last few years and wasn't shy about talking about that and working through really the last 2 years. Kind of had a lingering foot injury that he continued to play through for the majority of those two seasons. I think he's got a real opportunity to shine. Going back to when he was a first-time starter for Georgia that fall camp when he was getting ready to start, Kirby Smart was just talking about how freakishly athletic he was, saying that he was maybe the most athletic linebacker he's ever coached. I think he's going to put on a show in Indianapolis. And the other guy I would point to is Jared Wilson. It's a really unique situation with Jared, only a one-year starter at center. Cedric Van Praan had been the center before him, and he's now playing with the Buffalo Bills. But Jared got a ton of praise for his athleticism, just freaky athletic to be playing the center position. I think Jared's got a chance to be the first center off the board. And how early he goes, kind of hard to say. You know, center is not a position you're going to see necessarily in the first or second round. But I think Jared Wilson's got a chance to really impress, really turn some heads. And I think there's a legitimate chance he's going to be the first center off the board this April.
Yeah, the draft combine starting tomorrow on February 27th. It'll run through the weekend, March 2nd, which is pretty crazy to think that March begins this weekend. But Georgia, per usual, will have a ton of guys represented with the NFL scouting combine. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, he's with us every single Wednesday at this time. My man, we always appreciate you and look forward to this conversation. Tell people what you got coming up over the next several days over at Dogs 247.
Definitely going to be following along with the NFL Combine stuff. Going to be getting ready for that Georgia game in Austin. Not going to quite make the trip for that one, but we'll be following along, and we'll have a chance to talk to Mike White and some of the players ahead of that big game on Saturday night. So follow along over on dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. No shortage of plenty going on, and should be a very intriguing end to the college basketball regular season.
Always appreciate the time, my friend. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Sounds great, guys.
That's Jordan Hill, Dogs 247. Check him out. Always say if you have an Auburn 247, right, Auburn Undercover with all those guys, it carries over. It's the same thing. One subscription gets you everything you need. They've got a bunch of free articles and stuff on there, too, so go and check them out at dogs247.com. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap up hour number one as Auburn baseball explodes with the bats once again. We'll talk about how they did it last night against Samford when we wrap up hour number one after this.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He's with us every single week. That's during football season, basketball season. As the spring goes through, we'll get him on for spring practice and things. And then over the summer, we got to take a little bit of a break, bring him on periodically just to get some updates from Athens. So always appreciate him and his time. Auburn baseball was in action last night, Christian, and the bats are not an issue. Let me just say this. The hitting right now is not a problem for Auburn. Pitching, you know, it's okay. It's fine. You give up 8 runs in the midweek, not what you're looking for. But when you score 15, I guess things are okay. Auburn beat Samford last night 15-8.
Yeah, and when you're looking at it, I mean, for Auburn, you had 5 different guys take the mounds. Mm-hmm. And so a little bit more of what you're expecting. You're not bringing out one of your weekend guys to hopefully get you 5, 6, 7 outs on a Friday night like you are on a game like Tuesday, where you're trying to get a lot more guys in there that have the potential to get them comfortable on the mound and continue to figure some more things out. Auburn, the pitching side of things, I still don't think has been an issue per se. It's not allowing that one blow-up inning per game. I feel like that's what you have had a couple of times. You give up 5 in the fourth against Samford, and you give up 8 in the game. You allow 2 in the first, and then you only give up 1 in the seventh. Other than that fifth inning, you feel rather confident with your guys, and I think you still do. That being said, it's a luxury when you're able to not necessarily have your top stuff on the mound as a unit. Oh, but your offense can respond, giving you 15 runs at the dish. They put up 5 in the second, 2 in the third, 1 in the fourth, 4 in the fifth, 1 in the sixth, 2 in the seventh. They score in 6 straight innings before both teams went scoreless in the eighth and the ninth. Pretty good stuff from the Auburn baseball, the bats at least, especially as they work their way into Arlington this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you score 15 runs on 13 hits. You also draw 8 walks as well, and 34 ABs. You only strike out 6 times. I mean, Auburn is seeing the baseball very well right now. Yes, it is early non-conference play where you feel that you have an edge over these teams. I totally get that. But scoring 15 runs is no joke in college baseball. Giving up 8, and I think you said it perfectly, that wonky, crooked number inning, and yes, not just it being 2 or 3, 4, 5, and 6, right? Those are the ones you can't afford, especially this weekend for the Tigers as they do go and play some big names. Ohio State, Oregon State, a top 10 team in the country. That's really where you're going to see where this Auburn team is.
Sure.
And then Baylor on the way out. And so Auburn is still, too, playing several guys in several positions. Chase Frelick was the catcher again last night, which puts Ike Irish out in right field. Those two have been rotating early on behind the plate. Both of them are very good. You like Ike back there, but I've also had the take too, with as good as Ike is in terms of his ABs, which struggled last night, did Ike, but I like him playing right more just because I feel like it keeps him a little bit more fresh as a hitter. But you feel pretty good with that. You're rotating some guys in the outfield. You're still trying to figure everything out. You're just, what, less than 3 weeks into the season now? That's what Butch Thompson and the guys are doing. And you heard Carl Nonnemaker, who joined us on Tuesday, kind of talk about that a little bit, how just trying to feel everything out and see exactly where you are right now.
Yeah, again, you're nine games in. That's what you're trying to do in your non-con games, especially the midweek non-conference games, before you get into the real gauntlet of your schedule in the SEC, as tough as ever this year especially. But this team, so many young guys that we've talked about, so many guys that are coming in, making immediate impacts, still trying to get everything figured out, still trying to iron out all the kinks. And again, you're going to expect to have some of these games like this. That being said, it's nice to be able to complement it to where you don't feel like you can only give up three runs in a game because the offense isn't going to respond. Or you don't have to necessarily feel like at the plate you have to put up 15 runs every night because the pitching staff's not going to follow suit as well. So nice to have a midweek like this because you still have so many things you can work on the mound, but it could be a completely different story if Auburn loses 8-1 against Samford. Then all of a sudden the bats lose their confidence, cool down a little bit in a weekend where you're really going to need them again. Ohio State, Oregon State, and Baylor all in Globe Life Field. Should be a really, really cool weekend for the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, getting to play in that Major League Stadium where Nonnemaker was telling us Tuesday that most guys haven't played there on this roster, or played not there in particular in any Major League Stadium. Sure. They haven't had the chance to play in a place like this. So really, really cool for that. Auburn will then go to Birmingham. They'll play at Regents Field, taking on UAB next Tuesday before they come back home against Old Dominion. That'll be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The Monarchs, baby, of Old Dominion. That's right, on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, March 7th, 8th, and 9th. So that's what Auburn's got coming up on the schedule. They'll play UT Martin on Tuesday, March 11th at Toyota Field in Madison. And just like that, we're 2 weeks away, two and a half weeks away from SEC play. All Auburn does is open up with Vanderbilt. That's fine. That's the opener for the Tigers at Plainsman Park in the SEC, is the Commodores coming to town on the 14th, 15th, and 16th. Hour number one is in the book. Stick around. Hour number two coming up. We'll talk Auburn basketball as Bruce and the boys are back in action with Ole Miss. And then Double D. Daryl Dapperts joins us to talk basketball, football, and a whole lot more. That's coming up in hour number two. Don't you dare turn that radio dial.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on just a gorgeous day outside here in the Auburn Opelika area. A little warm for your boy, but that's okay. I would prefer it like 5 to 10 degrees cooler, but that's okay. I know it's been freezing. We had snow. People are complaining, so it's fine. I'm not going to be mad about sunny and 75 in February, okay? Not going to hear it from me. And so, hope you're doing well on this Wednesday afternoon as we are done with hour one and getting you started here in hour number two. If you missed any of the first hour, it was a lot. It was a good one. We talked a lot of college basketball, things that happened last night, right? Upsets across the board with Georgia beating Florida, Oklahoma State beating Iowa State, apparently. The beatdown that Alabama had to Mississippi State as they tucked their tail and walked out of Tuscaloosa last night. So all of that was in hour number one. We also talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 about that Georgia game last night and what the Dogs have to do moving forward if they want to make it to the NCAA tournament. So did all that. Talked a little Auburn baseball as well. So that was in the first 60 minutes of the show. If you missed it, you can catch it with the podcast. We'll post that for you later on today at ESPNAU.com. Coming up here in hour number two, we're going to start talking Auburn and Ole Miss. We'll dive into this game a little bit for about 10 minutes or so because we'll take our early break as we do every hour number two and Wednesday because we got to talk to Darryl Dapperich. No, we get to talk to Darryl Dapperich. Double D Wednesday, we get that coming for you at 3:15 as the Montgomery radio legend himself, who I hear will be in the car making his way to the Plains. He's going to be inside of Neville Arena again tonight, myself as well. I think you may try to get over there too. Should be a really fun game tonight between Auburn and Ole Miss. We're going to talk to Darryl about that, what we've seen so far up to this point, plus talk about the game this evening as well. May try to get a little football conversation in there with him as well. So that's all coming up here in just a few minutes. But before we dive into some content, want to remind you that hour number two each and every day here during On the Line is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them sponsoring the second hour of our show each and every day here on ESPN. If you want to get in on the show, now's the time to do it. Your last chance at 334-321-1390, a prediction. Maybe a score or something you're looking for tonight is Auburn hosting Ole Miss inside of Neville Arena. Their third home game in a row that they're going to have before they hit the road to Kentucky on Saturday, Texas A&M in the midweek, and then back home versus Alabama inside of Neville Arena. So give us a call, 334-321-1390, or you can shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067.
Yeah, we talked about these three straight home games for the Auburn Tigers being so, so important simply from the standpoint of the other teams that – or the teams that you're competing with for the one spot and the teams that they are playing. Both teams, now Alabama and Florida, have dropped a game in this three-game stretch. So if Auburn can win tonight over their three games, that, again, brings another game where you feel like that magic number drops and gets closer to not only a one seed in the regular season, becoming regular season champions, number one overall seed in the works as well.
So tonight, Auburn hosting Ole Miss, a team that we have seen before, a team that we had to fight off before, and now you get them inside of Neville Arena. And you just start breaking down what this Ole Miss squad has done recently. They're 8-6 in conference play. They're right there in the middle of the pack of the SEC. And as of late, has not been kind to the Rebels. They're on a two-game losing streak coming into this game. They lost to Mississippi State by 10. They lost on the road to Vanderbilt this past weekend. So they're looking for a win, and midweek in Auburn is not really what you're trying to – that's not the spot you want to be in if you're trying to find a win on the resume. And look, Ole Miss has got plenty of chances to get some wins if they need it, right? They're, again, middle of the pack in the SEC, hanging around, what do we say, like a six seed right now in the NCAA tournament, I think is what CBS and ESPN are saying for the Rebels. So they're in that fine line. We were talking with some people about Clemson the other day where they're kind of in that line of are you good enough to get up to a four? Are you, I guess for lack of a better word, bad enough to get down to a six seed because of the oh-so-cursed five seed in the NCAA tournament? The Rebels could do a little bit of anything. They play the number one team, the number five team, and the number three team. They play at Auburn tonight. They get Oklahoma this Saturday afternoon at home. They get Tennessee at home in the midweek, and then they end the regular season in Gainesville against what will still most likely be a top 10 team in Florida. So Ole Miss has got plenty of chances, Christian. They got plenty of opportunities to get big wins, and it starts tonight with Auburn.
Plenty of chances to get big wins or plenty of chances to continue skidding.
And sure.
You feel like there's not too many times this far late in the season a team like Ole Miss can do kind of nothing and sit on the fence. They're going to either make that jump or they're going to continue to slide. I'd be really surprised if it's they win one and lose one. It would be you find a way to possibly win both or – you continue to, again, go on that losing stretch. Auburn trying to avoid any possible upset. There's a couple games that we haven't gotten to yet where you could see some of the slip-up games. You've seen them over the past week or so. Auburn, 13.5-point favorites in this game, the over-under at 152.5. Who is the player for Ole Miss that comes out and has that crazy night that you feel like is inevitable against this Auburn team? Last time it was Sean Padula,
yeah,
who went for 29. Who's it going to be tonight?
I mean, I think Matthew Morrell is a pretty good bet. He's typically the go-to. Had 17 the last time against Auburn. They also, Auburn let Brakefield come off and get 12 off the bench in that game. He shot 5 of 10 from the floor. I mean, I'm going to maybe say, how about this? How about a little Jalen Murray action, the guard for Ole Miss, who starts, who just had a terrible game against the Tigers in Oxford. He was 0 for 6 from the floor, 0 for 3 from downtown. Only reason he got on the board, folks, hit 3 free throws. Didn't do a whole lot after that. He did have 4 assists and 1 turnover, but if I'm going to pick a guy, why not him? Why not Jalen Murray? May as well pick somebody. Close your eyes, throw a dart at the board and see what sticks. I'll pick number 5, Jalen Murray, to have a big game tonight because why not?
I'll pick Malik Dia.
Ah, good bet. Good one. Good
he
pick.
Has very often on games, had 22 in the loss against Vanderbilt. Only had 9 the last time against Auburn, but 16 against Kentucky, 17 against Missouri, 12 against Texas A&M, 23 against Alabama. So why not? That's my random dartboard, hopefully emotional hedging, and hopefully it's not the triple 20 or the bullseye that I'm landing on. I'm really excited to see and intrigued to see what this Auburn team looks like offensively. This team that's been struggling from behind the arc as of late at home, we've mentioned it. They're like reverse splits. This team shoots more than 10% better from 3 on other teams' floors rather than inside Neville Arena. Bruce Pearl was asked about some of those statistics, and he mentioned getting downhill, shooting more twos, and only shooting really tough contested threes after you've seen a couple of them go down. This team is very much good enough to make tough contested threes off the dribble. But we've talked about it. Sometimes they settle. Sometimes they get into that run where it's you have 2 or 3 good possessions and, okay, now let's try 2 or 3 from deep when they're not necessarily needed. That then turns to long rebounds. All of a sudden you see the other team cut it from 12 to 6. Bruce Pearl was saying that after we see a couple go down, then we can start taking some more of those tougher shots or the heat check shots rather than what you've possibly seen. Maybe stop settling or don't settle as much from behind the three-point line. Get to the free throw line a little bit more, and you'll try and see if you can work your way out into a big victory tonight.
The last time Auburn took on Ole Miss, again, this game was in Oxford. Your bench did not give you a whole lot. Tahad Pettiford had 9. That was one of the starts of the stretch for him where he still productive, had 9 points, 5 assists, did have 3 turnovers. Those were bad turnovers as well in that Ole Miss game, if you remember. They weren't turnovers, they were giveaways is what Tahad Pettiford had in that game. But it was the 5 starters who all scored in double digits, one of the best games of Dylan Cardwell's career. We'll talk to him tomorrow for Tiger Takes, brought to you by 12K Salon in downtown Auburn. That'll be tomorrow during the drive. But 10 points, 13 boards for Dylan in this game, right? Remember that? Where he also went 4 of 5 from the free throw line. That's got to be a career high in a game for our boy Dylan Cardwell. And a running joke with him, I don't say that to poke fun. He's very aware of his free throw shooting numbers, we'll say. But you had Janai with 20, Dylan with 10, CBM with 18, Denver with 16, and Miles Kelly with 15. If you have that tonight, you'll win. If you have four of five starters go double digits, you will win. Would love to see Tahad Pettiford get going. Chaney Johnson, a good game. Auburn has several mismatches in this matchup. If you just attack them like you did in that game in Oxford, you're going to be just fine. Yes, Auburn won by 10, but you had to fight for that 10-point win, and you were nervous the entire way. I think Auburn has a great matchup tonight in several key positions as they host Ole Miss inside of Neville Arena. So when we come back, we're going to talk to Double D. Daryl Dapprich will get him on the phone, talk to him about Auburn as what he's seen so far from the basketball squad, plus what he expects to see tonight. Double D, Daryl Dapprich joins us coming up next.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
It's that time. It's that time. It's a fan favorite segment each and every week here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's not because of me. It's not because of Christian. It's because of Double D. Daryl Dapprich joining us on the phone lines here on a Wednesday afternoon. My man, you are flying down 85 making your way to Auburn. Is that right?
I'm going to speed limit. I'm not flying. I'm absolutely abiding by the rules and the laws and going the proper speed limit, yes. But I'm heading down I-85 towards Auburn as we speak.
That right lane hates to see Daryl Dapprich driving towards Auburn, I tell you what.
Oh, yes, I'm in the right lane, as a matter of fact. So there you go.
Eastbound and down, baby, heading towards Auburn, Alabama. Daryl,
load it up and truck it. Let's go.
Yes, I love it. Love to hear it. And excited to see you tonight, my friend. And we're going to see a really good basketball game, I think, between Auburn and Ole Miss. And we're going to talk more about that later on in our conversation as Daryl joins us for 30 minutes each and every Wednesday here on the show. And we're just so blessed to have him a part of our program. And again, we're going to dive into that and talk about what Auburn has done since the last time we talked to you. But I want to get your overall opinion right now on the one seeds around college basketball. According to Bracketology, right, Auburn, Duke, Alabama, Florida, even with last night, that could be changing a little bit and some of those teams trying to slide in there. How confident are you in Auburn being a number one overall, a number one in general, and then the teams around them as well?
Well, I think, you know, to get three SEC teams would be amazing. I think the only move that you might see is if Alabama, who's got three real tough games left with Tennessee, Florida, and Auburn, if they were to lose two of those three, I don't think they stay on the one seed line. And I think the Florida-Alabama game and the Tennessee-Alabama game will both go a long way. There were a lot of people last night after Florida lost that predicted if Tennessee won out, they would go into the one seed over Florida. So there's these like elimination games coming up here in the next week as far as SEC tournament, as far as SEC championship contention, and the one seed. I think Auburn would have to really have an epic collapse to not at least get a one seed. I think they have to win three of their last four to be the overall number one seed, and it doesn't matter what they do in the SEC tournament. I think that would clinch it. I think if Auburn went 2-2, the committee would just love to slide Duke into that number one overall seed and would look for a reason to do that. So I think if Auburn could go 3-1 starting tonight in the next four games, I think they will have procured the number one overall seed regardless of what they do in the tournament. Because, look, I have said this for the last 5 years, and it's frustrating. I don't agree with this, but it just really doesn't matter what you do in the SEC tournament. I don't think it affects seed lines, good or bad, at all. And so that being said, Auburn, you know, could go into the SEC tournament, get beat in the first round or the second round, and I still think they would have the number one overall seed.
And do you think, and this gets into a topic you and I have had, and Christian and I have had a ton. I mean, if it gets to that point, Daryl, for the SEC tournament, should Auburn go and they'll have the double bye and things like that, do they go into that first game and play, start the starters for 2 minutes, get to the under four or the under 16 timeout and just not put them on the floor again and just move on to the NCAA tournament?
I would play your starters. I would start your starters as normal, and then I would play them significant minutes, but just not as many minutes as you've been playing them in the regular season. So I wouldn't go as drastic as sitting them in the second half, but let's say somebody averaged 24, 25 minutes, I might play them 18 or 19. And you know, with a double bye, that's a big deal if you play 5-6 minutes less in a basketball game over an allotted, let's say Auburn kept winning, because you are still trying to defend your tournament championship. And I know it doesn't mean as much if you win the regular season. I just think it's very hard to win both, and some teams have done that, and I'd like to see Auburn check that box. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is how healthy you are. Like, if Broome and Chad Baker-Mazzara go into the SEC tournament extremely banged up, then I'd limit their minutes. I would. I think they're more important to be fresh when you play in the NCAA tournament than they would to be playing back-to-back days in the SEC tournament.
Well, I'm with you on that. I think Auburn would have some sort of strategy like that, and I feel if it comes to that scenario, then Auburn is would be smart to do that, I think. And so I also want to ask you, Daryl, in terms of the NCAA tournament as a whole, 13 teams still slated, according to Bracketology on ESPN, to make it into the tournament, and that does not include Georgia, who just beat Florida last night. I mean, we're still legitimately talking about the SEC breaking a record for the most teams in the tournament. Do you believe that that can still happen, whether it be 12, 13, or 14?
Well, I'm surprised that there's still 13, and I know that that includes Texas and Arkansas, I think. I think Arkansas will get in. I don't see a scenario where Texas, you know, gets in. Maybe Georgia with that big win over Florida now moves them into the first, you know, the last four in, or a play-in game scenario. I've always just felt like that number was going to be 12. And so who's the odd team out between Texas, Arkansas, and Georgia? We'll see. I still think getting 12 in this tournament is just unbelievable. And it goes to show you how great this league is.
Sure.
To have 12 teams. I mean, that's just amazing. So I just don't see a scenario where they get 13 or 14. I really don't.
And Texas kind of puts themselves in that driver's seat because they play all of those bubble teams. And so you can definitely see where if Texas ends up falling, they could easily replace Georgia, or Arkansas could get into that the secured bye spot. Wanted to talk about the game that we saw last night with Florida and Georgia, and not necessarily the game in general, but the court storming side of things. Not sure if you saw exactly how it went down, but we've heard so many thoughts about the SEC commissioner talking about it, Greg Burns talking about it as well with court storming. That's become the topic of conversation, whether it's college football, college basketball, or whatever it may be, of getting rid of it or altering it. Last night, Georgia puts a 90-second timer on the clock, allows everybody to clear the floor, the Gators, the staff, everybody that did not want to be on the floor. And then as soon as that clock hit zero, they allowed the students to storm the court at Stegman Coliseum. What are your thoughts on court storming as a whole? Do you think it needs to be altered or anything? And what did you think about that game from last night?
When a young Daryl Dapridge was a senior in high school, I got to partake in a court storming, and it was one of the greatest things I've ever done. So I have to be careful, but that was in Tucson, Arizona, and it was incredible because you're mixing. I was, you know, 17, 18 years old. I'm there with other fans. There were cheerleaders on the floor. The University of Arizona basketball players were high-fiving us, and it was just an incredible experience. Now, that being said, you don't want that to turn into someone getting trampled, or you don't want somebody getting, you know, physical, or there being some kind of altercation. So I think that the answer is exactly with what Georgia did. You put a 90-second timer on there. If you're the PA announcer, you announce in 30-second intervals, stay off the floor, stay off the floor, and then you announce, okay, you're now allowed to enter the floor. And Georgia will stay. Georgia players will stay. Georgia cheerleaders will stay. Whoever the team that, you know, wins will stay to mix it up with the fans. And that's what's the – it's not that you're concerned that someone's going to get hurt with your own team. It's that, you know, that Duke player last year that got mad. And I mean, it's just – it's combustible. Now, you have to be careful with how you do it. You don't want to mug and maul your own players. But I think that 90-second little cool-down period allows everyone to clear off the floor that needs to, therefore making it less crowded. And then you go and you interact with the players. Because I do think it's a great tradition, and I do like it, and I think it's a memorable experience for the players and the fans. It's stuff they remember.
It's been a little bit watered down, you feel like, over the past couple of years because it's become such a trend. It's not even necessarily just upsetting one or two. It could be a top 10 team or even a top 15 team where you get court stormed. Do you think that it could possibly work in a double effect in a positive way to where you would see possibly less of it because it takes away a little bit of the authenticity of it? Because, again, you're having to wait those 90 seconds to where it feels a little bit forced. Therefore, you wouldn't see it as often.
It could, because it's supposed to be organic and spontaneous.
Right.
But then the flip side of that, Christian, is there a pent-up energy thing?
Sure.
Is the 90 seconds getting you revved up, getting you, you know what I'm saying, pent-up energy, having to wait? And it's building and it's building and building into a crescendo, and then you explode onto the court. So it could be either or. If you're having to wait and you're getting held back and you're so excited, there's that buildup. I could see it either way. I think that the emotion of it's not going to change one way or the other. I think it's just the safety of getting less people on the floor and the opposing team. Because at some point, some smart aleck kid's going to pop off to somebody on the opposing team that's in a very foul mood for having gotten beat at the buzzer, and he's going to get knocked out. It's going to happen if they don't control it and get the visitors off the floor. I'm surprised it hasn't happened already, you know, obviously. And then there's that fear factor of like what happened with Caitlin Clark when Ohio State was playing Iowa, and Ohio State's fans rushed the court in women's basketball, and Caitlin Clark, you know, they clipped her knee and she went down and all that. I mean, that's where you just got to be careful. And getting them off the floor, I think, will help with that. But I like the emotional aspect of it. You know, there's too many things in life that we don't celebrate enough that we have to tone down. And, you know, sports should be one of those things that we should lose ourselves every once in a while and take our minds off of things that are, you know, everyday, Monday things. And we should be able to get outside ourselves for sports. And I think rushing the court and rushing the field for college students allow you to have a more euphoric celebration. That's just how I look at it.
No, I think you're wrong. I think you should take away wins when they touch the floor. I think any opposing team should just, you know, you should just have the season canceled, like Greg Byrne says. I think you should just, your program should be shut down, should be SMU type of sanctions, just never be able to play in any athletic event if your fans even think about touching the floor, Darryl. How dare you?
It's stupid. I've said it 1,000 times. Two things can be true at once.
Sure.
You can do it in a way that's responsible and safe, and still do it in a way where it's very exciting and very memorable. And I think what happened last night was indicative of how it could be done. And I think the same thing needs to happen with football. I mean, they need to put it on the big scoreboard, and they need to have the PA announcer, you know, absolutely count it down, and then boom, you go. And as long as you jump the hedges and don't get swallowed up by the hedges, everything's good. And I'm speaking of experience of remembering what it was like. I never did it as a college student because I went to a school where you would never rush the floor for anything because they sucked. But I did it as I went to Northern Arizona University, the Lumberjacks. They were in the Big Sky. There was no rushing the floor. But I did it in high school because, I'd go to, you know, Arizona in football, beat the number 2 team in the nation 1 year. And then in basketball, they started to get really, really good when they clinched the Pac-10 championship, that kind of stuff. And I remember it. And I, with my best friend, and we, you know, I got to high-five Steve Kerr and Sean Elliott and those guys. That mattered. I mean, that's why people stay connected to sports. But you just have to be careful that you don't, you know, truck somebody on the way down, or a student gets trampled or something like that. So,
well, I say make Darryl Dapperich just the president of college athletics, not the NCAA. We don't want him in that crappy place. We want him to have his own organization and be the ruler of all things college
athletics. That's never going to happen, though.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah, what crazy idea that that would ever do be a thing. We'll talk more with Daryl Dapperich when we come back as Auburn hosts Ole Miss tonight. Daryl Dapperich, he sticks with us on the way back.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, which means we've got about 15 more minutes with Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn as well. He's around everywhere, man, so be sure you check him out on all those major platforms. And Daryl, you're making your way down to Auburn. You're going to be inside Neville Arena tonight for the game against Ole Miss. But before we talk about that one, want to flash back just a little bit, because last time we talked to you, Auburn was about to take on Arkansas. They have since done that, and Georgia as well, and two games that Auburn had to fight for to come out with wins.
They did, but then it looked like a completely different wins within, you know, 3 or 4 days when Arkansas went on to beat Missouri and then Georgia goes on to beat Florida. So that's why you never, ever, ever apologize for a win or take a win for granted, even at home, where I think Auburn presses a little bit and tries to put on too much of a show. I think they force shots and force passes because there's an element of, I think, a little bit of inherent pressure because of playing to the crowd. And I think that's why Auburn's been a little bit more loose on the road. Plus, this group seems to relish the us against the world role and the villain role, starting with the plane thing. Well, that happened after that. So I think Auburn plays a little bit more with an edge and a chip on its shoulder on a neutral floor or on the road. Neville is such a safety, comfort place that sometimes I think there could be a little bit of a letdown or a taking it for granted, or, like I said, forcing stuff. And Arkansas was right there with 3 minutes left to go in the game, and Auburn found a way to win, hit its free throws, did a good job, got a couple of defensive stops. And so that Arkansas team is scary. I'm telling you, there were scouts there at that game Wednesday night. They were there to see three Arkansas players, and they have some guys that can play. They got a really, really good backcourt. I don't think anybody wants to see the SEC tournament, let's put it that way.
So is it a crazy statement to say, based off of what you were talking about with Auburn on neutral floor and on the road, because we've dove into this a little bit as well, is it crazy to say that it could almost benefit Auburn to be playing in the NCAA tournament since it is on a neutral site, whether that be in Lexington or if they do get the one overall seed where they'd be playing in Atlanta? Because the stat that Christian brings up a couple of times is the fact that from behind the arc, Daryl, Auburn's shooting more than 10% better away from Neville Arena.
They are, which is surprising to me. They got to do something with those rims, is what I think the answer is.
Bring back the Maui rims.
If you do a deep dive, maybe I will when I get over there. I'm going to dunk and hang on it real quick pregame. That'll kind of adjust.
I thought you said you were going to Maui.
Yeah, I think that if you look at how it sets up, it's really, really beneficial, I think, for Auburn that they played all those neutral site games, because they haven't lost a neutral site game. That doesn't guarantee anything in the NCAA tournament. I'm just saying they're comfortable playing on a neutral floor, and they've proven that in the pre-conference schedule. They've lost one game on the road, one game at home, and they're undefeated on a neutral floor. And last time I checked, you don't play a home game or away game in the NCAA tournament. So I think that's going to be beneficial to Auburn. I also think that there's just something about that Neville crowd that it's such a production that you just – there's an inherent pressure to put on a show. And when you try to put on a show, sometimes you do too much. Sometimes you try to make that extra pass. Sometimes you take that fourth shot that's you normally wouldn't. So I think they're a little bit more focused, a little bit more – they execute. They're a little bit, more take care of the ball a little bit better on the road, because they have to be. And so that's why tonight, take care of business, get this one tonight. And then you're going into the Cave of Horrors Saturday, where you hadn't won since 1988 in Rupp. And so, this is the team. If there's a team that could put that to bed and end that streak, I believe this is the one.
Auburn with a three-game home stretch, as we've talked about, Arkansas, Georgia, and Ole Miss tonight. Both Arkansas and Georgia playing for their tournament lives, and after playing in Neville Arena, picked up two of the biggest wins of the season, respectively over Missouri and then Georgia over Florida last night. We talked about how neither of these wins are ones that give Auburn a whole lot of credit, right? You feel like, if anything, it would harm them if they lose. But looking at it now, which win do you feel like was the bigger win between Arkansas and Georgia from last week?
I think the Georgia win, because I think Arkansas didn't play really good defense, and Georgia did. Georgia's zone gave Auburn problems. Mike White has a really good track record with that zone being effective and giving – coaches fit, case in point last night, what they did to Todd Golden in Florida, who's used to scoring. That was a really elite defensive performance by Georgia, and yet Auburn got 82 points. So I think that was more impressive, and I think Newell was a problem inside. And you know, guys, think about this. Anytime you play a zone, especially the kind of zone that Mike White employs, it's designed to make the other team beat you from the outside. He knew that Cardwell, Chad Baker, Mazzara, and Broome, he didn't want them going to the basket. He didn't want to get them getting points in the paint. And I don't mean traditional backing somebody down with your back to the basket. Slashing to the goal is still getting points in the paint. So they wanted Auburn, Georgia wanted Auburn to be forced to beat them by shooting the three, which Auburn tried and was not shooting the three very well Saturday. And yet, despite that, had a ton of points in the paint. So Auburn did a really good job against a really effective zone, still getting the ball inside and still getting to the basket inside, which says that Auburn did a really good job adjusting in the second half with their scheme and their cuts and their back screens and that kind of thing, finding the soft spots in the zone, because it's designed to make you shoot them out of it, and Auburn didn't.
Is the zone going to go back or come back to college basketball, Derry? Because you bring up a really, really good point. Looking at an article right now, in 2014, zone defense was run more than 21% of the time. The study went until 2019, when it was ran less than 15% of the time. And now you're seeing teams score more and more points. Is the zone going to come back into college basketball especially, or is it something that's kind of a lost cause because you're seeing more and more teams adapt to that? We're going to get a layup or a dunk, or we're going to shoot it from 40 feet.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is that the three-point play has become such a big, big part of the college game, where somebody would much rather shoot a three-pointer 3 feet behind the three-point arc than take a mid-range jumper or put it on the floor and go by somebody or make that extra pass. And so it seems to be dunk or three, and it's just because that's what everyone shows on TV. That's the highlights. That's the moneymaker. So because of that, you see less zone. But I think that there's a lot of coaches, Tom Izzo at Michigan State, for example, that still employs a really effective zone. And when you get in the tournament and you get into these cavernous arenas with these big backdrops, and they're not gyms anymore, they're arenas that seat 16,000, 18,000. Zone can be really, really effective in the tournament, because shooting, you have to adjust shooting the basketball in these big, ginormous arenas.
It's a good point. It's a really good point. Something that, I mean, we talk about the backdrop thing all the time when a team goes on the road, especially early in the season or early in conference play. You worry about not just the fans or if they're the students are sitting on the floor like they do inside of Neville or Cameron Indoor, but really good points there. As we're talking with Daryl Dapperich from Locked On Auburn and the Barn, almost a month removed, Daryl, since the last time Auburn and Ole Miss played, when the Tigers went to Oxford. On the scoreboard, it was a 10-point win, 92-82. Of course, anybody that watched it knew it was a lot closer than that until down the stretch. What can Auburn take away from the first time these two teams played, where all five starters scored in double digits for Auburn? Dylan Cardwell played one of his best games of the year, but you also let a guy for Ole Miss have a career day with Padula going off for 29. So what can Auburn take away from the game back on February 1st and implement that into tonight's matchup?
Well, it seems like every time Auburn takes somebody away, somebody else emerges. You know, Morrell is a big scorer for them, and then Padula went off. So I think Auburn's going to have to be very, very careful. I can't imagine him having two career games against Auburn. Morrell was actually questionable to play tonight. I don't know. I'll know more when I get in the arena what the status of him is. But I think you just have to be careful and understand what it was that allowed Ole Miss to hang around in the basketball game and take that away. And Auburn's done a really good job typically of taking away the other team's biggest threat, and then somebody else emerges. So we'll see what happens tonight. I suspect they'll have a plan for Padula. I don't think he's going to be able to get all the open looks that he had. And we'll see if Morrell plays, because he's been one of Ole Miss's most effective scorers.
Who's the X factor for Auburn tonight that needs to step up? Is it Denver Jones? Is it Miles Kelly? Is it Tahad Pettiford? Is it Chaney Johnson, who coming off four or five straight games in double figures, couldn't play too much because of foul trouble? Other than what you're expecting to see from Janai Broome, who is the X factor on the offensive end of the floor that needs to step up for Auburn tonight?
I think Pettiford needs to. I think that he has gone in a little bit of a scoring drought, and he's been a little bit absent. I know he's a big-game player, and he really comes through in big games, but he's been a little bit absent here lately, and I think he needs to emerge, and he needs to have a big game tonight, especially with, you know, Chad Baker-Mazzara being questionable with the stomach virus issue that hit him. So, you know, we don't know if Chad Baker-Mazzara is going to play, and if he doesn't, you're going to have another guard step up and fill that scoring void, because Chris Moore – the hard hat guy, he'll give you good quality minutes, but he's not much for scoring. So you're going to have to really, really make sure that you get that void somewhere, and I think Pettiford could be the guy for that.
And while we don't want Auburn to look ahead to what comes this weekend, we'll talk to you, because since between now and next Wednesday, Auburn will have played three games, including the one against Ole Miss tonight, where Auburn then goes to Lexington on Saturday, a place you mentioned, it's a house of horrors. They just have not been able to they haven't won there in my lifetime, Daryl. Sorry to put you in that spot. And then Auburn also goes to Texas A&M on Tuesday. So what do you predict Auburn to do in these next three games, and for Auburn to do that or better, what do they have to do in these next three games?
Well, I think the next four games, Auburn goes 3-1. I mean, they could very easily possibly go 4-0. Very difficult to go 17-1 in this conference. So I could see them slipping up somewhere, whether it's at Rupp or at Texas A&M with Buzz, given, you know, Bruce Pearl some problems with his schemes. But I think Auburn, at the end of the day, you know, 16-2 still wins the league. And I still think they end up a number one seed overall.
Okay. All right. Can Auburn win on Saturday? Can Auburn go to Lexington and come out with a win for the first time in what seems like forever?
They can. I mean, they'll be favored, I would imagine. So, yes, I think this is the team. I'm not saying they will, but I think they can. And I think this is the team, the way they're built with all the seniors and all the veterans, this is the team that can do that, not be too big, not care about previous years and the streak and the curse and all that, and go take care of business and get it done. Yeah, they absolutely can. I'm not saying they will, but I'm saying they can.
All right, we'll see what happens. But Auburn's got to take care of business tonight as they host Ole Miss. Double D, Daryl Dappert's going to be in the building. Excited to see you, my friend, and hope you get the rest of your drive to Auburn, and then, of course, going home tonight safely as well. So be sure to tell people where they can find you, what you got going on.
You can catch me on Locked on Auburn Fridays and Wednesdays, and on the Barn on Sunday nights.
There you go. Daryl, appreciate you, my man. I'll see you in a couple hours. That's Daryl Dappert. It's Double D as he is rolling into town. Again, he'll be there tonight. I'll be there tonight. Looking forward to what should be a really, really good game between Auburn and Ole Miss. We will make our final picks and predictions when we come back and wrap it up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Double D, Daryl Dappert, being with us as he is every Wednesday. We got a lot of great conversation in there on teams around the SEC right now, games around the SEC. There's some big ones going on again tonight, Christian, in college basketball. I know we got to make our picks for Auburn, Ole Miss, and we will do that in just a second. But how about a top 20 matchup in the Big Ten as Michigan State, the 8th-ranked team in the country, they go to Maryland, who all of a sudden is 16th in the country. 21-6 is this Maryland team. I talked about them way back when on how talented they are, and they've really found their footing in the Big Ten. They host Michigan State, and they're favored against Michigan State. Maryland at home tonight, 5:30 on the Big Ten Network, favored by 4.5.
Yeah, Derek Queen has quickly become one of the best players quietly in all of college basketball. Averages just about 16 points a game, 9 rebounds, 2 assists. I think his coach said that if he was European, he'd be the number one pick in the league just because of how he plays basketball. He threw something else in there, too, that I'm not going to say on air. But Maryland, a 3.5-point favorite over a current 2-seed, the Michigan State Spartans. There's a bunch of teams right now.
I see 4.5.
It might be.
I mean, either way.
The ESPN little spread thing I see.
They're favored by multiple buckets.
Sure. Yes.
Over a top 10 team, which is pretty impressive.
I'll take it.
Really? You're going to take it?
I might as well.
Wow. Okay. I don't think Michigan State has a forward to run with him. I think they've got good guards. I think they got some solid bigs. I just don't know if they can stop him. And if they let him go off, then, yeah, Maryland can absolutely win this game.
Yeah.
I'll take Michigan State, though.
Sure.
I'll take Michigan State.
One of us will have a nice little click to be able to say to start the show for picking it up.
Michigan State, since losing that game to Indiana, they followed it up with a win over Illinois, Purdue, and Michigan. They're playing really good basketball right now as Michigan State. I'll take the Spartans. Give me Sparty Land on the road against Maryland in the SEC. Vandy on the road at Texas A&M. Should the Aggies be worried tonight, Christian Griffin? 6 o'clock on the SEC Network. Vanderbilt and Texas A&M. The Aggies favored by 7.5. Ain't no way Vanderbilt goes on the road and beats Texas A&M, especially with the Aggies on a 2-game skid, one before they play Florida and Auburn. No. A&M will get right tonight.
This is a get-right game for A&M and the Aggies.
They're
coming in full focus. They know what they have in front of them, but they're not overlooking tonight. I think they win big.
Nothing crazy in terms of top 25 teams outside of the SEC. Clemson plays Notre Dame. Woohoo. Memphis plays Rice. Yay. St. John's on the road at Butler, another under 500 team. Arizona hosting Utah, who just fired their head coach. Did you see this situation? Fired their coach. He hadn't been there very long. His resume wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible either. Just really weird timing that Utah decided to fire their head coach. And coming down the stretch here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, got a phone call. Let's get to it quickly. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I agree with celebrating and, you know, having fun, but I think it's maybe a bridge too far because right now the universities have plausible deniability. You know, it's against the rules to get on the tour, you know, that kind of thing. So if somebody gets hurt from an attorney's perspective, you know, the school isn't liable. But if you condone it and create a situation where, hey, we're going to count down, and then you can come on the court, and then it's mass chaos. Somebody gets hurt. I'm not saying it's a guarantee liability, but it dang so opens the door.
Yeah.
So I don't think we'll ever see that. And that's probably not, from a legal standpoint, very smart. But
yeah,
I agree with something.
Okay, I think so, too, and I hate to cut you off, but we're down to, like, a couple of minutes. But I think that's a really good point there. He's saying, yes, it's a good idea to hold them off, but kind of like Darryl was saying, too, with the whole court storming idea, just because you hold them off for 90 seconds and then all hell breaks loose doesn't necessarily make it okay.
Right. I wonder what the 90-second thing, I wonder if that determines it to where the game is now over and that's now a school thing rather than them paying.
I think that's just the amount of time they're giving a team to go through the handshake line and get the heck out of Dodge.
I mean from the standpoint of, because Georgia did the 90-second, do they now not owe the SEC money for the court storming?
Well, yes, that's how the rule is written, yeah.
Because the game is over now, and now that is all strictly on them rather than on the SEC.
Yeah, well, that's kind of, again, that's what he was kind of saying, too. Just because you wait and then it goes crazy. crazy. Doesn't, I mean, something's going to happen, I'm sure, and it is what it is. Appreciate the call here on the way out again. BYU is on the road at Arizona State, an under 500 team. But in terms of SEC games, quickly, we're going to make our final picks for Auburn and Ole Miss. Talked about A&M and Vandy. Kentucky, weird game, on the road in Norman tonight, taking on Oklahoma, one of those bubble teams in the SEC. Cats only favored by 2.5.
2.5. I talked about it yesterday. Is there going to be a slip-up opportunity? Does he do it again? No.
Ooh, you got Kentucky.
I have Kentucky
tonight
winning, and because it's only 2.5, I'll say they cover as well. I don't think Oklahoma has the horses offensively to put up. It might be a higher scoring game, but I expect under the 10-minute mark in the second half, the Cats to pull away from
it. I agree. I'll take Kentucky to win by double digits tonight in Oklahoma. I think they do it. I think their offense is way too good, and Oklahoma cannot keep up with them. Old school game right here, man. Old school game. Texas and Arkansas doing battle in Fayette, Vegas. Nobody really calls it that. Fayetteville, rather. Texas and Arkansas, 8 o'clock on ESPN2. The game after. Yeah. I was trying to go with the whole Stark Vegas thing. Nash Vegas doesn't really work. Arkansas and Texas, this game behind Auburn and Ole Miss, 8 o'clock. I'm taking the Hogs.
Look at the ticket prices.
I don't see it. What are they?
$301.
Old school matchup, man. I'm telling you. Old school matchup. I'm taking Arkansas. I'm also taking Auburn to win by 12. So they don't cover.
I'll take Arkansas to win and cover as well. 86-71. Auburn wins it.
There you go. We'll talk about it tomorrow coming up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. We'll have great guests as well. So you won't want to miss it. 2-4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins saying stay safe. We'll talk to you later.